Well, good morning, everyone. It's 8:06 on your Wednesday morning, September 15th. I'm Sean Higgins at the KPCW studios in Park City, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher once again. Looks like it's going to be another beautiful day in the Wasatch Back, and with a full forecast on the line with me now is ABC4 meteorologist Thomas Gaboy. Good morning, Thomas.
Well, good morning, and yeah, it really is going to be a beautiful day, and we're also halfway to the weekend, so as we're moving to the weekend, we do get more beautiful weather in Park City. You'll notice a lot of sunshine, a little bit of haze, but it's really not going to be too bad for today in Park City. Get a daytime high of 77 degrees under that mostly sunny sky, and then into tonight it'll be on the comfortable side with overnight lows dropping into the upper 40s and lower 50s. So tonight you might want a sweater. It's not going to be anything that's too cool. And then for your Thursday and Friday, going to be very similar to what we get today, just maybe a degree or two cooler. So for your Thursday, high of 76 degrees with an overnight low of 50 degrees Thursday night into Friday morning. Then on Friday, temperatures will be ranging more so in the middle 70s compared to the upper 70s today. So the temperature backing off just a little bit as we move into your Friday. But then as we go into the upcoming weekend, this has been something that we've been talking about over the last couple of days. Changes are going to be on the way. A system moving in from the Pacific Northwest is going to bring changes into Sunday. But for Saturday, we're still looking at temperatures starting off in the 50s, ending up in the 70s under a mostly sunny sky. Then heading into Sunday, moisture is going to start working its way in as that system from the Pacific Northwest starts to approach the western United States. And then we'll also add the chance for a few showers as we move throughout the day on Sunday. And that chance is going to be after lunchtime. And the temperature, you're also going to notice it starting to back off as well. Sunday, a daytime high of 71 degrees. Then on Sunday night, the low in the middle 40s. And we're also going to keep that slight chance for showers. And that slight chance for showers does stick around for Monday, but it is going to be significantly cooler. The daytime high on Monday, 59 degrees. So next week, we are moving into fall. So fall begins next Wednesday. And as we approach next Wednesday, it's going to feel like it. And on Monday night, overnight lows dropping into the upper 30s, maybe getting into the middle 30s. So Monday night has the potential to be really chilly. And then on Tuesday, we're looking at a mostly sunny sky with a daytime high of 52 degrees. And then Wednesday, we'll be looking at fall beginning, and then we'll have those fall-like temperatures in store as well.
Thomas, thank you. Enjoy your day.
You too.
We'll be right back with more. Stay with us. Well, stay tuned. Starting at 8:15, we'll have Peace House Executive Director Kendra Wyckoff and Board Member Karen Marriott with details about the 25th anniversary celebration at the Peace House this Saturday. The Park City Institute Executive Director Ari Ioannidis has a rundown of the main stage season that was announced last night. And Sarah Hutchinson joins to talk about a fundraiser for Afghan women and girls. Yoga with Manis is tomorrow. The drummer for Michael Franti, Manis Latini, will play drums, and a yoga class will be from 10:30 to 11:15 in the morning. And after the local news hour at 9 a.m. after NPR News is The Mountain Life, Pete Stoughton and Lynn Ware Peak will be speaking with Kent Maurer, a local sports trainer and vegan activist who will share his journey to going vegan. He explains why he wants everyone to have a plant-based diet. Maurer will also discuss the release of a new film, Eating Our Way to Extinction. Then Dr. Danielle Dick, an award-winning developmental psychology professor and researcher, will speak about a provocative, science-based approach to parenting that is centered on a child's unique genetic code. Taking a quick look at some local headlines now, the Park City Municipal required a private person to cease using a website she created to schedule wedding events at the city-owned property on the ridgeline south of town known as the Church of Dirt. Carolyn Murray has details on that.
The ad hoc wedding site locals will refer to as the Church of Dirt is back to regular scheduling practices. For couples interested in reserving the spot for private weddings, you'll have to make a trip to Empire Pass and register your date and time in a book that stays at the site. Many betrothed couples etch their names on a stone or a piece of wood as part of the reservation ritual. In June, a self-proclaimed part-time Park City resident named Erin told KPCW that she removed the scheduling book and left a note referring people to her website. Her motive, she said, was intended to help people avoid scheduling conflicts. Erin declined to give KPCW her last name. Park City Municipal Trails and Open Space Manager Heinrich Dieters said she was very cooperative when the city asked her to remove her website.
She was very cordial. You know, I think she truly did not understand the impact that she was having. You know, we reached out a couple times and she agreed to take the website down.
Dieter said safety is a big concern. He said it's a balancing act for the town to continue allowing this type of event in this location.
When we get calls or requests about Church of Dirt, our response is that there's no reservations. This is sort of a community and public aspect, and that if people abuse it, and abuse it meaning, you know, leaving trash or having conflicts of use or traffic impacts, we're going to have to basically remove it. So we're not to that point yet, although I would have to say that we're pretty darn close, because it really is something that has defined us. I think there's a lot of people in the community that have been married up there versus public safety issue up in that area.
The parking area for the Church of Dirt is on Empire Pass on the Wasatch Summit County line. Dieter said it is in Wasatch County and Park City does not have enforcement jurisdiction over the parking. Dieter said it's no longer only a locals' place, and he wants to stress the difficulty of managing the heavy use.
You know, if it's abused, it's going to have to go away just because, you know, the safety and parking impacts there. It's unfortunate, yeah. But it's what it is. It has deviated from being sort of a Park City community or Summit County or even Wasatch County, that now we're getting people from, you know, all over the country, actually, that are using it. We have to balance all of those things.
Dieters urged visitors to the area to behave respectfully and suggested there are many public lands and open spaces that are beautiful and accessible in addition to the much-loved Church of Dirt. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, President Joe Biden flew into Idaho on Monday as the first of several stops around the West to talk wildfires, climate change, and his infrastructure plan. The Mountain West News Bureau's Madeline Beck reports.
Biden landed Monday afternoon in Boise to visit the National Interagency Fire Center. It's a hub for agencies to coordinate over wildfires, and Biden was the first presidential visitor in its 50-year history. Grant Beebe of the Bureau of Land Management told Biden the massive destructive fires we're increasingly facing are costly.
In wildland fire, there's no one community, agency, tribal organization that has enough resources to manage all of its fires.
Idaho Governor Brad Little urged Biden to help limit lawsuits from people who are affected by wildfire management tactics.
So that we are not endangering these firefighters when we put them out there, because we've got forests or even rangeland conditions where the fuels are just almost impossible to fight.
For his part, Biden praised firefighters and noted the recent raises he'd secured for federal firefighters. He says he'll work with Western governors on next steps and spoke of his infrastructure plan, which has some bipartisan support in the region.
It literally provides for billions of dollars for wildfire preparedness, resilience and response, forest management, and public water sources.
Of course, many disagree with Biden's infrastructure plan, and protesters in Boise were critical of everything from the president's handling of Afghanistan to COVID-19 vaccines. Biden is also visiting California and Colorado to talk about wildfires and his Build Back Better infrastructure plan. For the Mountain West News Bureau, I'm Madeline Beck.
Well, Heber City residents will stop receiving irrigation water around the end of the month. KPCW's Ben Lassiter has more.
Heber City Public Works Director Matthew Kinnard told KPCW that the decision to cut off water was made by the Central Utah Project, the company that controls water flow to Heber City. Irrigation water is used for lawns and pastures. Sunday, September 26th, is the final day water will be available for flood irrigation. That's the type of watering in large fields with water flowing down trenches to reach crops. And sometime the following week, pressurized irrigation, most common in sprinkler systems, will stop as well. Most people within Heber City limits, who are served by the Public Works Department, use pressurized irrigation. Kennard says after the water is cut off, a small amount will be left in the watering systems. Once it's gone, that'll be the end of irrigation water going to homes until next year.
When the CUP, which is the irrigation company, when they turn off their pumps that following week, it will just basically be gravity until the water has drained from the system.
Kennard says people's pipes could be empty as early as Monday, September 27th, a bit earlier than usual.
We normally have a pretty loose date of October 15th each year, so this is pretty close to what we would expect to be seeing anyway, probably about a week and a half quickly than is normal.
He says the Public Works Department asked residents to conserve water throughout the summer of drought, and they did surprisingly well.
So overall, I've definitely been extremely pleased with how the public has been conserving water. We were extremely nervous in the beginning of the year. I wouldn't have been surprised if the pressurized irrigation had run its course by the first to the middle of September. So being able to get all the way into October is a really nice surprise. It's definitely stretched it a lot further than I was expecting it to.
Culinary water, or the water that flows in indoor plumbing, is not impacted by the end of irrigation water flow. Ben Lassiter, KPCW News.
Well, good morning, everyone. 8:17 on your Wednesday morning. It's September 15th. I'm Sean Higgins at the KBCW studios in Park City. Sitting in for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Well, the Peace House invites the community to celebrate 25 years of hope, advocacy, and awareness. Joining me in the studio now is Peace House board member Karen Marriott. We are waiting for Kendra Wickoff. I heard she's stuck in some traffic this morning, unfortunately. But good morning to you.
Hey, thanks, Sean. Thanks for having us.
So the 25th anniversary celebration at the Peace House is this Saturday morning, 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. What do we need to know about this event?
Well, it really is a community celebration. Our history, we've spent this year writing stories as I've researched out our history, which has been super fascinating, really come to know, honestly, the history of Park City. And this grassroots effort that started in 1990 with the death of Natalie Noble, who was a Summit County resident who was murdered by her estranged husband in the Albertsons parking lot. And that really, Terry Orr at the time was the park record editor, and she put it on the front page of the paper and later did a series of stories just raising awareness around domestic violence. And what we learned was several women got together, kind of church ladies, who wanted to know more about domestic violence and wanted to do something about it and began this grassroots effort. And so, you know, out of that sprung the Peace House and this incredible community resource for anybody who's suffering from interpersonal violence and abuse. And we also do an incredible program of education. We go out into all of the schools in Summit and Wasatch County from kindergarten to senior year and speak on an age-appropriate level about, you know, what do safe and healthy relationships look like. And so this weekend is really exciting. From 10 to 10:30 will be our major program, and we are honoring three pillars of Peace House, we're calling them. Three people that without their initial, without their part, we wouldn't be where we are. And one is Natalie Noble, the woman who was killed and who really was the catalyst for this organization and brought people together to create resources. And so her family will be there, which is really an honor. It was interesting as I spoke with them to talk to them about the impact that their mother's death actually had on our community and how it, out of some tragedy, this incredible resource has risen that has actually saved thousands of lives and housed many people and provides all these resources now, from clinical therapy to case management to all these community resources that are free to anybody who needs them. And then we're also honoring Jean Polson, somebody I'd never even heard of. And she and Linda Hathaway, both from the Lutheran Church, went about this social ministry after the hearing about Natalie's death and opened it up to the community and began what was Domestic Peace Task Force, which later became what we know as Peace House. And we're honoring her and her family's coming from the South Dakota. And Bob Wells, of course, I sit here and I look out on the Bob Wells Plaza. And unfortunately, I didn't have the privilege of knowing Bob, but every single person I talked to has just remarked what an incredible person was, what a quiet force. And without him, we wouldn't have had our first shelter that was built in 1995. And so this anniversary really marks the opening of the shelter. But we really learned is really pretty much our 30th anniversary as we researched our history. But it's really been the marking of our 25th anniversary since the Peace House shelter opened. We'll also present our history to the Park City Museum, to their new executive director. And we'll invite people in to see our new film. We made a short film about 11 minutes long from Claire Wiley that really summarizes our history and is a great record of where we've come. And simply, we want to thank all the incredible people in our community. We would not be where we are today without the thousands of volunteers and the quiet volunteers. I mean, I've learned about people that one gentleman who runs the Lions Club for over 25 years has shown up every Friday and finds out what is needed and goes and picks up random items. And people that have organized storehouses, people that have volunteered at different events, people have been, you know, volunteer advocates. They're just, we want to thank our community for all that they've done to create this resource in our community. So we invite everybody to come. We'll be serving breakfast as well. We'll recognize all of our 25th anniversary donors. We will have these history plaques of Natalie and Jean and Bob for people to see, and other history memorabilia. They'll be able to see our film. And we just want to invite them there to thank anybody that's ever been involved with Peace House.
Sounds like 25 years of really important work. I understand guests will also receive a brand new book, The Peace House Story. What is The Peace House Story?
Well, I've written these 12 pieces throughout the year, and we've added a few additional, just really capturing our history from the beginning, which started with Natalie Noble's death and carried, you know, up to 2021. As I interviewed Kendra, who's been so busy, who's our executive director, she has the remarkable thing she's done during COVID and all the changes in policies and procedures and how that we've run our Peace House to be this safe environment, healthy and physically healthy as well, like just the complications around that. So it's really our history from 1990 to 2021. And we will give each household a copy of this softback book, which is 106 pages. And it's really our extension of as a thank you to those that have supported Peace House over the years. So it's we look forward to offering that gift to everybody and telling again our story, because it's such an important part of who Park City is. We are a community that rallies together and finds solutions by working together.
Wonderful. And I believe Kendra has just joined us. Kendra, good morning and thank you. The traffic is terrible up there.
Yes, I'm so sorry for being late.
No worries. So we were just talking about this weekend's activities. Sounds like you guys have quite a program planned, some wonderful tributes to some very important people in the community. Anything else you want to touch on about this Saturday?
Well, we're just really excited to have the community come out and celebrate this 25th anniversary. Karen has done an incredible job over the last 18 months or so, working to research, talk to all of the incredible contributors, pull that information together and compile it. And her heart and soul is really showing up in all of the writings that she's done. And I think that our community is going to feel that energy when they come out. And also a deep sense of gratitude for everyone who's been involved with Peace House from its inception.
Wonderful. And I understand guests are required to wear masks when they're indoors. Any other COVID protocol we need to be aware of if you're going to attend on Saturday?
Yeah, great. Thanks for asking. You know, we want to make sure that we are protecting the most vulnerable in our community. So we need to have masks worn indoors. And we're also strongly recommending that people wear masks when they cannot social distance outdoors as well.
We also encourage people to sign up online and register online. They can go to peacehouse.org and under events and kind of on the screen, there's a place to click to register for the event. We would love to kind of know our numbers as we are having this catered breakfast too. We want to make sure we have plenty of space, but most of it will be outside so people can feel comfortable. And we will have smaller groups watching the videos and timing that so that there's some room to social distance.
Mm-hmm. And does it cost money to attend on Saturday, or is it just sign up and show up?
No, we just would love to have folks register, as Karen said, and it's a free event, and we just look forward to celebrating with our community.
Mm-hmm. And Kendra, I wanted to ask you kind of more broadly, there's been a lot of really good reporting done over the course of the pandemic about how incidences of domestic violence have increased because people are kind of trapped in the home, and if they're in a bad situation, they physically cannot leave for a good amount of time. Was that trend reflected in the Park City community as well, or were the rates, you hate to call it normal, but what were the trends seen over the past 15 or so months here?
Right. Well, at Peace House, our internal data reflects a significant increase in requests for services. So since 2019, we've seen a 50% increase in calls for help and support. We had our shelter at or near capacity during the entire time over the last 18 months. And we're not seeing those trends subside. So definitely feel like the pandemic has had incredible impacts across our community. As you mentioned, that increased isolation, as well as other stressors, housing insecurity, unemployment, things like that, that are not causes of domestic violence, but they're like pouring gasoline on an already difficult situation. So we are seeing that significant increase at Peace House. Many of our case management hours and our counseling hours are also increasing. And we're seeing a lot of increased complexity for folks where they're navigating domestic violence, but also these other challenges related to the COVID-19 pandemic.
Mm-hmm. And for people who are maybe in one of these situations and is unfamiliar with the work Peace House does, what kind of services do you provide?
Well, at Peace House, we have a number of services to support victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. We have an emergency shelter for folks who are fleeing domestic violence, or if a sexual assault survivor needs a safe place to stay. We just launched our transitional housing program, so we have about 6 apartments online for that longer-term housing program. We offer legal advocacy, so if somebody needs help with a protective order or a civil stalking injunction, counseling services with therapists, case managers who are really our team that walk alongside a survivor and help support their safety and get them connected to additional resources. And we also have a really robust prevention education program that reaches out into the community. So one of the fastest ways to get connected to support is through our 24-hour helpline, where we have trained professional advocates that are able to answer questions, listen to someone, understand more about their situation, and then work to get them connected to resources internally within our organization, or if there's some appropriate resources in the community they need as well, getting them connected to those.
Sounds like very, very important work, as I mentioned to Karen earlier, and only highlighted by the last 18 or so months here,
yes,
unfortunately. Sounds like a wonderful event coming up this Saturday. Anything else either of you want to add before we run out of time this morning?
I'm excited to, for people that don't know who Peace House is and they aren't familiar, we have so many new people that have moved into the community. We invite them to come and learn more about our history and be part of our future.
And I would say if you or someone you know is experiencing abuse or you have any questions about programs or services, please reach out to Peace House. We can be reached at 1-800-647-9161.
Well, thank you both so much. That is Executive Director Kendra Wickoff and Board Member Karen Marriott. Peace House is celebrating 25 years of really important work in our community this Saturday. 25th anniversary is happening at 700 Round Valley Drive, the Peace House Community Campus, Saturday, September 18th from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. To register, head to peacehouse.org. Kendra and Karen, thank you both so much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
We will be right back with more right after this. Well, Summit County Health Director Phil Bondurant says the county's COVID-19 numbers are showing some modest improvements compared to the rest of the state. But Bondurant says the county isn't out of the woods yet. Rick Bruff has more.
In his regular report to the County Board of Health on Monday, Bondurant said that case counts for Utah showed an increase at the end of August and early September. Summit County showed a decline, he said, reporting 9.5 to 10 cases per day in the early part of the month. But Bondurant said they're waiting with bated breath for any impacts from the Miners' Day weekend. The county's level for 14-day active positive cases per 100,000 people came to nearly 380 cases in mid-August. Summit's 14-day positivity rate now is 330 per 100,000 people. Within Summit, the Eastern County shows 450 cases for every 100,000 residents as compared to a 14-day rate of 285 in the Western County. In August, the county was reclassified from a moderate to high transmission status. Bondurant said one reason for that was a state metric.
And that is a statewide number for ICU utilization and total hospital utilization that, generally speaking, is not something that we can influence in Summit County. That's a statewide metric that's used. And as we learned 3 to 4 weeks ago, the state ICU concerns and the number of hospitalizations increasing at the rate it has, that ticked us up to the high level of transmission for moderate.
The state has reported that over 91% of all its ICU beds are occupied. Dr. Wayne Provins reported that the Intermountain Healthcare System expected to hit 150% this week. Meanwhile, IHC recently announced it will be postponing many non-urgent surgeries for several weeks. The doctor also noted that several studies are saying it's time to look at additional booster shots. He said the county has seen growth in breakthrough cases, patients who have been vaccinated but still caught the virus.
The immunity from the vaccine lasts about 8 months after you've been vaccinated. Natural immunity, if you were to get the disease without being vaccinated, your immunity lasts for almost 3 months, a little more than 2 months, but about 3 months is a good number. So the vaccine lasts about 8 months. And now we're seeing folks who were vaccinated about 8 or 9 months ago who are having breakthrough cases. But again, those are the folks whose immune systems are already weakened due to their own medical conditions or ages.
Dr. Provins said he's working with the county health department to have booster shots available within the month. Phil Bondurant said the county's also looking forward to getting a vaccine for children 5 to 12. He told KBCW that once a vaccine gets an FDA approval on an emergency basis and is okayed by the Utah Department of Health, they can start giving the shots. Some of the best news for Summit County is that its vaccination rates are among the highest in the country. At least one dose of the vaccine has been given to 93% of eligible residents. A complete series of shots has been given to 82% of those eligible. But Bondurant said it's no time to be complacent.
To say that we are out of the woods and that we can rely only on the vaccination numbers, I think is a bit of a fallacy at this point. It's too early to tell, and it's too early to make a prediction as to what is to come when the weather turns and we begin to move inside and things change. But it does provide hope that those that are vaccinated, the 82% that are vaccinated, that are eligible, tend to fare better than those that are not, which is why our focus lies in those that ineligible population for vaccination.
Summit County Health Director Phil Bondurant for KPCW. I'm Rick Braff.
Well, good morning, everyone. 8:33 on your Wednesday morning. It's September 15th. I'm Sean Higgins at the KPCW studios in Park City, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Institute's main stage season was announced last night. The Institute's executive director, Ari Ioannidis, joins me in studio with a rundown of that main stage season. Ari, good morning, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning, Sean. Thank you for having me.
Sounds like a pretty fun event you guys had last night. You announced 4 speakers, 4 music acts, and 2 dance acts, and I see that Stephanie Land is back on the schedule. That sounds exciting.
Yeah, we can't seem to have a season without featuring Stephanie Land, so hopefully the 4th time will be the charm.
Mm-hmm. So give us a rundown of who we can expect. National Geographic, Second City, that sounds super, super fun. What can we expect?
Well, first of all, we had a great event last night. Thank you for everyone who came out and the staff who worked extra hard to put on a great event at OP Rockwell, and the streaming. We streamed it live, too. So we're starting off with National Geographic. We have, like you said, 5 speakers, 4 music acts, 2 dance acts, and what we call funny. Amy Vital is a wonderful photographer. She's dressed up as pandas to shoot pandas. And also, one of my favorite things that she's done as an amateur photographer is she followed the last white rhino to be moved and relocated. She documented that. So she'll be coming to the Eccles stage on October 9th. This is a family show. We've bumped the times up on the family shows to 7 o'clock. So just about anyone would enjoy that. Then we follow up with just a legend in music. Danny Seraphin was founding member of Chicago. And he's put together a band that sounds a lot like those early Chicago groups. Mark Bonilla is his guitar player, so if you're a Terry Kath fan, you will love this. Not only do they play music from his 26-year career, you know, gold albums, platinum albums, you know, 20 top tens. He's also put out 2 albums with CTA that are very good. Some of the music you've heard here. So that will be on Friday, November 26th. That is a great show. If anyone has seen that band before, they'll love it. You mentioned Second City out of Chicago. So the Second City is probably the premier sketch comedy group. Just about anyone who's been on Saturday Night Live, everyone from Ed Asner to Amy Poehler has been an alum there. It's a list too long to mention. They will bring their sketch show here and also do improv, which is what they're famous for. So that'll be exciting. Back to National Geographic Live with Spinosaurus, lost giant of the, I can't even pronounce this, Cretaceous. So this is this is a young paleontologist. Usually you think of paleontologist is old folks, but this is a young guy, discovered this dinosaur, and he's going to come talk about that discovery and why this is so important. Then, let me give you the date on that, another family show on December 11th. Continuing in December, Mark and Maggie O'Connor. So those people who know music know Mark O'Connor. He's played with, when you say everybody, literally everybody. So from Johnny Cash, when they re-recorded or came out with an updated version of What Devil Went Down to Georgia, he was the fiddle player on that. Not only does he play fiddle, he plays violin, and there is a difference. He and his wife, Maggie, put on a great show. He's also played with Yo-Yo Ma, James Taylor, a couple of solo albums that are just fantastic. So if you love great musicianship and just wonderful violin, he's also an exceptional mandolinist and guitarist. You'll hear that on December 22nd. Great, great sort of acoustic show. We're going to ask you to hold the dates between Christmas and New Year's. December 28th and 29th, we have something special lined up. Don't have them confirmed yet. You guys just broadcast a book review of Heather McGee's book, Zero Sum Game. She's a wonderful speaker, talks about equity from a whole different perspective, from an economic perspective. She was the CEO of Demos, and we're expecting her on January 8th at 7:30. I encourage everyone to read that book. Back to National Geographic Live again. Terry Virts has shot so many pictures in outer space, 300,000 images that you'll see. He's going to show parts of the documentary film he produced, which was an IMAX film, and we've got a new projector there that we'll be able to use, and also show his beautiful work. And then another thing on Saturday, March 12th, if you hold that date, we're calling it funny, very funny. And then we're going to hopefully have Stephanie back. Once again, she's written a great book that talks about how you get stuck in poverty and it's so hard to get out of it. Made is the book, Hard Work, Low Pay, and A Mother's Will to Survive. She, just a wonderful story. I would encourage everybody to read that book. Hopefully, she had a medical issue. We had the pandemic, fire, and now hopefully we'll be able to make that happen. And our first ever Latin, dedicated Latin production will come in on towards the end of the season. That is 12th of May. It's Grupo Fantasma. Everything will be in Spanish, including the performance and all the advertising. Dance Theater of Harlem, Sunday, May 7th. We're excited to bring them back. And So Percussion on April 9th, which they're the premier percussion group. It's sort of a classical group, but they are very great performers. And we are going to partner with the Park City School District to put students on stage. That's one of seven shows that has student outreach this year.
Sounds like quite the lineup. You mentioned those two unconfirmed events. Do you have an idea of when you might be able to confirm them so people can circle their calendars?
Well, I would encourage everybody to call their agents. This is one of the very frustrating things about doing this job is getting people to confirm. I'm being told we're routing around. So once I assume in the next couple of weeks we'll do a press release, and of course you'll be excited to hear about it.
Looking forward to that. You also did mention that half of the PCI main stage acts this season involve some kind of student outreach. And you're also hoping the school district will take advantage of this. What kind of advantage would you hope they take?
Well, what I do when I'm booking every act is I ask what sort of student engagement can they do, and sometimes I have to push them. What we've done for the first time this year is provide the school district with a comprehensive report. We sent it to Dr. Gilday. It's hard for them to take advantage of every opportunity. Teachers are busy, schedules are tight, things are going, but Danny Serafin has offered to do, and there's a video out there of him playing Make Me Smile with a percussion group and about 30 students, which is just super exciting. He's offered to send the music and do that. So percussion is, I think that's going to happen for sure with the percussion ensemble. They do something called Beyond, Above the Noise, which is just a great piece, and that'll get the students on stage. Second City has offered to do for the drama class improv session. We also have offers from, gosh, I can't remember now, the astronaut, he's going to do a dedicated, Terry Virts is going to do a dedicated show for the students where he, you know, they'll get to really meet an astronaut, which is exciting. So we've got a lot of opportunities here. We hope the school district will take advantage of as many of them as possible. We have a dedicated staff member Stacy will help make that as easy as possible. She does all the scheduling, all the coordination, making sure people need to go there. The one I'm kind of excited about is for the dance group. Hopefully we can make it happen because Dance City of Harlem is going to be here for a week because they have another show down in Salt Lake. So I'm hoping that we can get them in front of the dance groups to be able to work with professional dancers. It's just a thrill. So we're here to help the school district take advantage of as many of those as possible.
Sounds wonderful. And chamber music wrapped up last month. I understand you're looking for more chamber acts. How did chamber go this year?
I think it went really well. It's something that for me is important because the theater has such great acoustics, and to be able to put a act up there and be able to hear it directly from the instrument to your ear is very exciting. We had four wonderful shows. We've already booked two more, and of course we're working with the Park City Chamber Society to make that happen. We've made several dates available. My guess is that it'll be between 5 and 7 acts. They're on Sunday afternoons. They're not expensive. They're $35. It's a great way to bring your family out on a Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock, enjoy a great show, and then be able to go to dinner. So that'll happen. Professor Rock's also coming up. So we're expecting 5 of those shows. I have heard names, and these will be biggest acts that come to Park City that you'll be able to go to a ticketed event to see. So that'll be very exciting as well.
And just head to parkcityinstitute.org to purchase tickets for these?
Parkcityinstitute.org. Tickets are on sale for all these events, and you can also register to hear more information. So very exciting times.
And health protocols, that's still kind of a moving target right now. Obviously, very fluid in Utah right now with everything. What kind of COVID-19 mitigation will be in place at these events?
I think we demonstrated this past summer that we've taken the lead on making sure people feel safe. The theater's large. We took a big hit in revenue to have spacing, even on our most popular shows. We escalated some of those protocols when we thought it was necessary. We haven't heard anything from our artists requiring us to do anything beyond what we're doing now. So I've been very pleased with where we're going. Things are changing. You know, the Delta's come and go, and we'll respond accordingly.
All right, thank you. Anything else you want to add before we run out of time today?
No, I would encourage people to go to parkcityinstitute.org, get tickets now. Warren Miller also has released their latest film. You will see a preview on our website there, and you can buy tickets for that one as well.
All right, that's Park City Institute Executive Director Ari Ioannidis. Their main stage season was just announced last night. Once again, head to parkcityinstitute.org if you are interested in tickets or want to see full schedule of events. Ari, thank you so much. Always a pleasure.
You're welcome.
We'll be right back with more right after this. Well, a doctor from Park City Hospital says the overwhelming majority of their current COVID-19 patients are unvaccinated. But Dr. Wang Province reports a more troubling trend. He says many of those patients are hostile to hospital personnel, are misinformed, and on occasion, they even accost health workers. Rick Bruff has more on that.
Dr. Province, the hospital's medical director, told the Summit County Board of Health Monday night that over 90% of their COVID patients are not vaccinated. He said the attitude from patients is a problem the staff has seen for about 2 months. He gave an example of a woman in the emergency room.
She, being COVID positive, spit in our nurse's face, kicked our nurse in the chest with her foot, and scratched all the technicians and everyone else that were coming in to try to put in an IV, try to resuscitate her, calling them every name in the book. We had to close the door because there were children in the emergency department who shouldn't be hearing the kinds of words she was using to describe our caregivers. And that was just one who then gets admitted up to the ICU, where we had 3 other patients like that, where the nurses and the technicians and the physicians that are here literally trying to save their lives and keep them alive are being treated like this.
Dr. Province said not every single case is like that, but he said a significant portion of the patients don't believe they have COVID.
Believe that it's some sort of flu virus that has been released by different governments, that they don't believe that there is such a thing as a COVID-19 virus, and that we as caregivers trying to aid them are part of a conspiracy or a government conspiracy to put microchips in them or to label them with some sort of disease that somehow we financially gain from falsely labeling their condition. And as a result of that, they treat us that way.
In addition, family or friends of those patients have the same attitude, he said, which means they don't want to wear masks in the hospital or observe visitor limits in hospital rooms. The doctor said if the patients do believe they have COVID, they sometimes demand unorthodox treatments. He said there's been a lot of interest recently in ivermectin, a treatment for parasitic infections. However, Dr. Privin said 21 medical societies have advised ivermectin has no benefit for COVID, and its manufacturer, Merck, said it should not be used to treat the virus. He said the behavior of patients is a stark contrast from a year ago.
Last year, when patients came in, they had fear in their eyes. They looked to us for hope and help, and we provided that to them. And this time, we're not being treated as quote-unquote heroes. Rather than hope, we're seeing hate in their eyes. But I have to give credit to our nurses and docs and technicians. They truly are just turning the other cheek and doing everything they can to keep these patients alive and well.
Dr. Privin added that a year ago, the average age of COVID fatalities was a little over 70. This year, the average is 50 years old. He said of the 10% of their infected patients who are vaccinated, what are called breakthrough cases, almost all are over 70 years old or they are immunocompromised. That is, they have a medical condition or are undergoing treatment that reduces the body's ability to resist infection. Still, Dr. Privin said the breakthrough patients have a milder case of the virus. He said the Intermountain Healthcare System, which includes the Park City facility, is at 100% of its bed capacity, and it's expected that will hit 150% this week. Meanwhile, he noted more and more nurses are leaving the profession due to burnout. Summit County Health Board members like Doug Evans said they were disturbed by the doctor's report.
It's disheartening to know that it's gotten to this point. I just always thought we were better than this. I'm just so thankful that you guys are the heroes. You're all the heroes.
And board member Dr. Alyssa Golding asked if there was anything they could do.
I want you to feel safe at work too. That's really important, especially if people are spitting and doing things like that. Do you feel like you have what you need? I know people's behavior is unpredictable, but it's really important to me and all of us that you guys feel as safe as possible in your work.
Dr. Privin replied that they do have security and the Park City Police Department has offered to help de-escalate situations when they occur. For KPCW, I'm Rick Bruff.
Well, good morning, everyone. It's 8:48 on your Wednesday morning. It's September 15th. I'm Sean Higgins at the KPCW studios in Park City. Singing for Leslie Thatcher this morning. Well, Yoga and Monas in the Park for Good is a fundraiser and yoga event for Afghan women and girls taking place tomorrow morning starting at 10:30. Joining me now with details is event organizer Sarah Hutchinson. Good morning, Sarah, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, good morning, Sean. Thanks for having me.
So obviously Afghanistan been in the center of the national news conversation for the last month or so. Why is this cause so important to you and why organize this event?
I have so much concern and so much heart for the girls and the women in Afghanistan. And I associated myself with an organization, Too Young to Wed, who is doing the work over there. They have relationships with some girls and women over there. And I went to make my donation. That's what I can do, give a little money. And at the same time, I was given the opportunity to host a yoga class with this incredible musician who's coming to town. Manas Atien plays drums with Michael Franti and Spearhead, and I have tickets to go see them on Thursday evening. And we have a mutual friend, and she said, would you ever be interested in hosting a yoga event? He plays live drums, and we could have yoga in the park, combining a few of my favorite things, being outside, sunshine, yoga, live music, and then the opportunity to raise money for this organization that I was already thinking very much about.
Sounds like a wonderful cause. So I understand Manas. Is a self-taught musician from Nigeria. And he's actually played with Michael Franti and Spearhead for over 20 years. Quite an accomplishment.
Yes, he is an incredible musician. All of them, if anyone's ever seen Franti live, they are just so fun and so soulful and very, very feel-good music. And Manas contributes to that environment. He can play any instrument, and he is right now promoting his new album that he created himself. It's called One Accord, And he will be playing drums and keyboard at the park after the class tomorrow morning. And then all the yogis that sign up, not only does their money go towards Too Young to Wed, but they also go home with a CD from Manas.
Mm-hmm. So let's kind of go down the rundown for tomorrow morning. Jeremy Ranch, called Woods of Parleys is the park you guys are hosting this in?
Yes, it's Woods of Parleys Lane, actually, is the name of the park. And it's the address is 4275 Sunrise Circle. So if you've ever been back there, it's behind like Hidden Cove. It's kind of a nice dog park. And we are going to be setting up there. The class is from 10:30 to 11:15. I am teaching it for all levels, so all bodies invited. And bring a mat, and then you're welcome to stay 11:15 till noon. Manas will be playing, jamming, and we can just enjoy the music.
And I see here tickets are $40 for adults, $25 for students. Where can people register and sign up?
Yes, thank you. Manas Atien, so that's manasitene.com/yoga.
Wonderful. And is there an option for people to maybe donate more if they think $40
thank
is a little
you.
Too light?
Yes, on the registration we have options to donate. Ticket prices are $40, but we also have a $60, $80, and $100 option. And it's been really, really wonderful to see how many people are actually choosing the higher option. I also invite you, if you can't handle the registration, but you know what park I'm talking about, just come and I'll be accepting Venmo and we'll make it really easy. I would just love to see anyone who's around that would like to have this very intimate event with an incredible musician and do some yoga with me.
Sounds like it will be a wonderful morning. Sarah, anything you want to add before we let you go?
I just really appreciate all that you do and all the good hearts out there. We spend so much time struggling. This has been a hard year, and it's hard to know where to put our efforts, if it's climate or if it's Afghanistan pandemic. So just doing the best we can. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Once again, Yoga in Manas in the Park for Good is a fundraiser and yoga event for Afghan women and girls, taking place tomorrow morning starting at 10:30. Tickets are $40 for adults, $25 for students. Runs until about noon. Do some yoga. Hear some wonderful music. Sarah Hutchinson, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much, Sean.
We'll be right back with some local news right after this. Well, the Park City Community Foundation awarded $275,000 to support 52 high-impact nonprofit groups who create positive change in the community. Carolyn Murray has this.
Immigrant Legal Services, Eats Park City, and the Egyptian Theater Youth Theater Summer Camp Scholarships are examples of some of the Community Foundation's grant recipients. Park City Community Foundation Vice President of Marketing and Communications, Christine Coleman, said the grants reach dozens of organizations that provide various services locally. Affordable, quality childcare, mental health support, trails, open space preservation, affordable housing, and legal assistance are among the programs the foundation supports.
There is a grants committee that reviews all of the applications that nonprofits submit, and they have a very thorough process where they even do site visits with the nonprofits, and they analyze the organization's financial information and really look at the impact that their programs will have and gain lots of knowledge about how the nonprofit will best use the grant.
This year, the awards ranged from $2,000 to $12,500. For instance, the Christian Center of Park City will use the $12,500 to fund its counseling center. Summit Community Gardens plans to allocate its $10,000 award to fund the Fighting Hunger Garden Bounty Program. South Summit Education Foundation Assistant Director Kathy Carr said the school district received two awards. A $2,500 grant will fund class enrichment.
So it's really exciting for our teachers because a lot of times, as we know, school teachers use their own pocket money for things that aren't covered on regular budgets. And this grant is actually going to help with those kind of needs in our school district. So we have set up a mini RFP for classroom teachers to write to the foundation and let us know what they are requesting, what their needs are, and then we will be able to supplement or pay outright some of the things that are not normally paid on their budget.
The South Summit School District will use the $3,500 award to purchase new mobile hearing test equipment used in all the schools to support the special ed department. It allows the district to address hearing loss and speech development earlier. The Park City Community Foundation awarded KPCW $10,000 to develop its new afternoon newscast programming project. Over the past 14 years, the Park City Community Foundation has allotted $2 million to nonprofits that serve the greater Park City area. The grants come from funds raised by the Community Fund, including people who make gifts of all sizes, Community Pass members, and the Live PC Give PC annual Day of Giving. The awards event drew about 200 people. It was held outside at Board President Christy Cummings' home with vaccine requirements for those attending. Richard and Jill Scheinberg received the Tricia J. Worthington Community Service Award for their contributions, serving on multiple boards, volunteering throughout the community, and their legacy of giving. Carolyn Murray, KPCW News.
Well, Summit County is figuring out what to put on November's ballot for an open space general obligation bond that could be up to $50 million, and they want the public's help. If approved, it would be the first countywide open space bond in Summit County's history. Park City and the Snyderville Basin have both approved bonds in the past worth tens of millions of dollars for open space purchases. Park City bonded for a $48 million purchase of Treasure Hill in 2018. Summit County Councilor Chris Robinson told KBCW in August that with large developments now creeping into the eastern parts of the county government wants to be ready to purchase parcels for preservation when they hit the market. The Summit Land Conservancy's Cheryl Fox said right now there is some flexibility on what the bond money could be used for. In addition to preserving open space, she said other uses could be on the table too.
It could support some open space services, if you will. So I think there's been some interest in, for example, some support for wildlife corridors and fencing and things like that. It could be used to purchase conservation easements to help save farms and ranches. It could also be used to purchase land that might be needed for a park or something along those lines.
The process for determining the ballot language runs through September, and two public hearings will be held in the county on September 22nd and September 29th. September 22nd's public hearing will be held at the Ledges Event Center in Colville, and the September 29th meeting will be at the Richens Building in Kimball Junction. The bond will be on the ballot for the Summit County general elections on November 2nd. Well, good morning, Summit in Wasatch County. It is 9 o'clock, and that means we're at the end of the local news hour for this morning. I'm Sean Higgins, sitting in for Leslie Thatcher. Today, one last look at local weather before I go. 54 degrees right now in Old Town Park City, 46 down in Heber. Going to be a gorgeous day in the Wasatch back. Sunny skies throughout with a high of 77 in Park City, 85 down in Heber. We're headed to the Mountain Life right after NPR News at 9:06. Pete and Lynn have quite a show lined up for everybody today. I'm signing off. We're back to NPR News. You're listening to KPCW.